When Charles Darwin finished his now famous book, The Origin of Species, he thought he had explained every clue but one. Though Darwin's theory could explain many facts, he knew there was a significant event in the history of life that his theory did not explain. Darwin's hope was that the evidence would arise later. But as of 2013, this fossil evidence has yet to be found. In his new book, Darwin's Doubt, Dr. Stephen C. Meyer tells the story of the mystery surrounding this explosion of animal life, presenting the theory of intelligent design, where features of the universe and of living things are best explained by an intelligent cause, and not by undirected random natural selection. For a limited time, you can pre-order Darwin's Doubt for 43% off the cover price.
43%!
Plus free shipping and 4 free digital books at darwinsdoubt.com. This offer will end soon and is only available at the website, so log on now to darwinsdoubt.com. That's darwinsdoubt.com.
Pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And yes, it is a great day, particularly for people who care at all about the deepest of causes. What's the deepest of causes? Are human beings exceptional? Is there such a thing as human exceptionalism? Are we just a bunch of chemicals, blobs of matter with no deeper significance? Or are human beings somehow an infinite world, each human being, and created in the image of a creator? Why is that relevant? Well, it's relevant, first of all, because we're doing our regular weekly science and culture update. And secondly, because of the epical verdict in the Gosnell trial in Philadelphia. For those of you who have been living in some kind of sealed space or container, Kermit Gosnell, the truly disgraceful Philadelphia abortionist, has been found guilty on 3 charges of murder and another charge of manslaughter. He is appropriately facing the death penalty. And NARAL, Pro-Choice America, has found some way to blame pro-lifers for the whole thing. It's unbelievable. But it does raise more profound issues of belief and questions of materialism and what human beings really are. And I can't think of two individuals better suited to talk about this in all of its ramifications than my two guests this hour. My friend, Dr. Stephen Meyer, who is a philosopher of science, and he is the head of the Institute for Science and Culture and at Discovery Institute right here in Seattle. And connected with us is a professor at Oxford University and author of God's Undertaker, Has Science Buried God, Dr. John Lennox, of Oxford. Dr. Lennox, you're connected with us now.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be with you.
And I should say that both of these gentlemen received their doctorate degrees, their PhDs at Cambridge University. And I understand, Dr. Lennox, that while you were at Cambridge, you actually attended some lectures by another famed Cambridgian and academic named C.S. Lewis.
I did indeed. I heard the last lectures he ever gave. I used to slip across from the maths lecture theatre to the English faculty lectures and listen to C.S. Lewis expounding John Donne's poetry.
A remarkable opportunity. Stephen Meyer, to explain to everyone out there the deeper significance philosophically and in terms of all the issues on the table right now concerning science and culture, the deeper significance of the Gosnell verdicts.
Well, I've talked to a lot of people about the trial who wonder, you know, how could this happen? You know, how could this happen in America? It's crazy, I've heard people say, that someone could actually feel justified in taking the life of a baby that was as capable of movement and crying and the whole works. And there's a quote from the French philosopher Voltaire who said that madness is reasoning correctly from incorrect premises. And we were talking in the break beforehand, and Dr. Lennox said it well, that if you, this is the direct consequence of believing that a human being, a human embryo, a fetus, is just a lump of tissue, just a lump of cells. It's the materialist view that the only thing that makes us special is a particular configuration of the matter out of which we're made. And if that's your view of what a human being is, then this is the logical consequence of this. And we've seen in the universities the idea of the materialist view of human beings defended by leading bioethicists even. It's not actually so inconceivable that someone would do this if they start from this premise and then reason correctly from that materialist premise. And that's what we're challenging at the Center for Science and Culture, is that materialist view of reality.
1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. When you hear about the Gosnell case and some of the truly guilt-stricken people who worked with Dr. Gosnell and testified against him, on many occasions, including the three babies for which he is now convicted of murder in the first degree, they describe babies who were crying, who were moving their limbs, mm-hmm. who had been delivered and were alive before Dr. Gosnell snipped their spinal cords. And the question I always have for people is, if this baby isn't human life, what is it? It's alive, and it's not a dog.
It's not a pig.
Thing,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's not a cat. What is it? What is the kind of answer? And I know, Dr. Lennox, you in particular have dealt a lot with the new materialists and the new atheists. What would they say about this issue? What is this baby if it's not a human being?
Well, I think this horrific case illustrates the fact that ethics is worldview dependent. And I can't help thinking of Peter Singer's statement, "There is no reason to think that a fish suffers less when dying in a net than a fetus suffers during an abortion. Hence, the argument for not eating fish is much stronger than the argument against abortion." And it seems to me that the worldviews determine the ethics. I believe that human beings, as you said, are made in the image of God, and therefore human life is utterly unique. But if you reject that, then, of course, logically, it leads to this kind of view that I've just quoted.
You know, John, you make a really good point, because Singer, who's at Princeton, a famous bioethicist, also says that all we're doing is, in the denial of a qualitative difference between humans and animals, is catching up with Darwin. So he's basing his ethical system on a materialistic worldview that he in turn derives from a deeper scientific source. So the worldview is sometimes called scientific materialism, and that's, again, what we're challenging.
One of the things when you talk about bioethics and how all this comes home, last week there was a flurry of press attention. I was thinking about it all weekend, and then boom, something hit me, actually over our Sabbath. There are alarming statistics about the explosion of suicide in the United mm-hmm. States in the last 10 years, particularly among baby boomers. And no one seems to be able to understand why. Could it be that part of the reason why is that we, for the first time, have a mobilized movement in America saying that suicide should be authorized, and again, going back to this materialist standard of human beings? In other words, if you want to remove the stigma for people taking their own lives, and we do, we want to remove laws or rules against it, why should people be surprised if more people are taking their own lives?
I think it's a really good point, and I think there's also an existential psychological dimension to this, again, of a worldview dimension. There's a famous physicist at the University of Texas who says the more the universe is comprehensible, the more it seems meaningless. And when students are exposed to that materialist view of a lack of purpose and meaning to existence, they often take those big questions to heart, or that perspective to heart, as they're thinking about the big questions, and say, well, maybe my life doesn't have any meaning.
Dr. Lennox, when you were at Cambridge some years ago, obviously, I know that C.S. Lewis died on November 22nd, 1963.
So it's many years ago.
Okay, it's some time ago. You were one of the students, and I imagine you weren't the only one, who was interested in deeper questions, like the questions you address in your book about God's undertakers. Do you find more recently that students have the same hunger?
Oh, enormously. I think the hunger has increased spectacularly. I've just been doing a series of trips to the United States with the Veritas Forum and speaking in Harvard and Yale and Brown and places like that. And I have been amazed at the interest, you know, a couple of thousand students a time coming out. And I don't think I've ever known a time, particularly among university students, when there was such a hunger. And I think partly it gives an answer to your question, because the materialistic worldview is extremely reductionistic, and it reduces meaning out of existence, and people long for meaning. They long for transcendence. There's a bit of very interesting psychological work being done recently on the two halves of the brain. And Ian McGilchrist has published this thesis, which is fascinating. He said, what we've done since the Enlightenment, effectively, is so emphasize the left side of the brain, the analytical side, the reductionist side, that we've forgotten the right side, which looks for integration, that looks for a big picture. And so we've got to the stage where we've lost the big picture. And that leads inevitably to suicidal thoughts. And we need to recover that transcendent big picture.
We'll continue the efforts to recover the big picture with two remarkable guests, Dr. Stephen Meyer of the Discovery Institute. He's the director of the Center for Science and Culture. And Dr. John Lennox, a mathematician at Oxford University. That and your calls coming up.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. That's 1-800.
Minutes after the hour on the MedVed Show, where it's easy to save 15% or even more on car insurance with Geico. Just go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. The only hard part is figuring out which way is even easier. And it's easy to see why Dr. Stephen Meyer, has been at the forefront of conversations about the some of the most important issues on the table. The conflict that many people see between science and religion, is it an irrepressible conflict, or do the two elements of investigation actually reinforce one another? We're speaking about that with Dr. Stephen Meyer. He is director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute. This is our regular Science and Culture update from Discovery Institute. You can find out information about the center at our website at michaelmedved.com. And by the way, I should mention that Stephen's new book, following up his bestseller, Signature in the Cell, is called Darwin's Doubt, The Explosive Origin of Animal Life and the Case for Intelligent Design. And that book is available at a pre-publication discount of 40%, which is huge, huge. People can order Darwin's Doubt at our website at michaelmedved.com. And if you're in the Pacific Northwest, you can hear Dr. Meyer speaking about his book this Wednesday night, May 15th at 7 p.m. at Northwest University. Information about that appearance will also be posted on our website. Dr. Meyer, we were talking a little bit about the idea that you quoted Voltaire, who suggested that madness really is logically applying, you said, illogical premises. Mm-hmm. And the chief illogical premise that really threatens us seeing clearly or dealing appropriately with so many issues, that core illogical premise is what?
It's the idea that human beings are nothing more than a collection, a particular complex collection perhaps, but a collection of atoms and molecules, that we are essentially matter and nothing more. Our founders, who believed in inalienable rights and dignity of the human being, premised their thought on a very different foundational idea, which was that we were made in the image of a creator. And so when you lose that idea and instead replace it with the idea that we're the result of a long, undirected, materialistic process of evolution and nothing more, then you end up with the idea that we have no intrinsic dignity, and we're seeing the effects of that in society.
1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. Let's go to Michael in Pasadena. You're on the MedVed Show with Dr. Stephen Meyer.
Oh, thanks for my taking my call. Sure. I was wondering, can we, you kind of touched on it right now, can we find dignity in human beings any other place other than to say that we're made in the image of God? And if not, then the most important arguments to be made is that, therefore, that God is and that he has spoken.
I think that's a very good point. The question is really a question of ethics. How do we define morality? How do we derive morality from the analysis of matter? It's been, I think, very difficult to get any kind of objective morality out of a materialistic worldview. As Professor Lennox said, these ethical issues are worldview dependent. If you take a materialistic worldview and have a materialistic starting point, you're going to end up with a very relativistic view of ethics where there's no objective standard to which we can all appeal.
When you talk about a relativistic view of ethics, there apparently is a new movie, which I can't wait to review, featuring sort of, it's a road movie and a buddy movie involving Richard Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss, who are two celebrity science atheists. And at one point in the trailer for the film, Krauss asked Dawkins, "Richard, what's more important if you had a choice, to explain science or destroy religion?" And you can see on the screen, Dawkins is having a tough time deciding. Which do you think is more important to Dawkins?
I think that they want to destroy religion because they don't just explain science. And in fact, I think the science of the 20th century and the beginning of our new century points in a very different direction. Professor Lennox has written on that persuasively too, with his refutations of the new atheism that Dawkins and Krauss are known for. The new atheism is basically the idea that if you understand science properly, you will understand that belief in God is untenable, a delusion, as Dawkins puts it in one of his books.
Yeah, the God delusion.
Exactly,
the title.
Yeah.
Let's go to David in Chicago. David, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Dr. Stephen Meyer.
Hello.
Hey.
I would like to ask, I'm sort of an armchair philosopher myself, and I've thought about this conflict between science and religion for a long time. And it seems to me, what I've come up with in my own thinking is that the distinction itself between science and religion is a destructive distinction. I can't find anything constructive in it. And I'd like to know, in other words, it seems like the distinction itself creates a sort of, all it does is create a sort of us and them mentality, where science seems to claim a privileged perspective on reality. So I'd like to know, I mean, it seems to me that eventually that this distinction is going to be somehow overturned. It seems like we have to get to that point somehow.
I think that's an extremely perceptive comment. The term scientia, from which our modern term science is derived, was a classical term for knowledge. And it used to be understood that we could have knowledge of the material world and knowledge of God both, that these were both properly speaking objects of human inquiry. And you're exactly right. The modern, the new atheists, the materialists who are really imposing an ideology on science are saying that all we can know is the material world. And so science, in that sense, the materialistic science has the facts and religion has the faith. And the obviously, in that way of framing the argument, science in the materialistic understanding of it wins every time.
Well, here's the point. The idea is that science contradicts the pillars of religious faith. And when I get into conversations with my agnostic and some atheist friends, I say, where's the contradiction? They say, well, religion used to teach that the sun revolved around the earth, and then Galileo, and he had trouble with the church. Of course, when you have to reach back 500 years, that's a little bit problematic. What's the most common answer you've gotten to that challenge, Stephen? When you ask people, where is it exactly science contradicts religion?
Typically, people will point to Darwinian evolution, but that theory itself is under huge pressure, as I describe in my new book. But I think the more interesting point is all the incredible discoveries that have been made in the last century in cosmology, the discovery of a definite beginning to the universe, in physics, the discovery of a fine-tuning of all the parameters that make life possible, evidence of design from the very beginning of the universe, and then the discoveries in biology of digital code and nanomachinery inside inside cells that point persuasively to evidence of design. So when you add all that up, it's actually a new day in science that I think is pointing in the very opposite direction, actually to the existence of some kind of design.
So what you're actually saying is some of the so-called new atheists should get out of the 19th century
exactly.
and into the 21st. We'll be right back with more calls with Stephen Meyer of Discovery Institute, author of Darwin's Doubt. Find out all about the book at our website at michaelmedved.com.
Portions of The Michael Medved Show are brought to you in part by the Discovery Institute. To learn more, click on the Science and Culture banner at michaelmedved.com.
Four minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show with two very distinguished thinkers and writers and academics joining me on our religion and culture, science and culture update. But yes, it also does deal with the subject of religion and science and their alleged incompatibility. 1-800-955-1776. This is made possible by the Discovery Institute, where Stephen Meyer is the director of the Center for Science and Culture. And Stephen is going to be speaking this Wednesday night, 2 days from now, May 15th, 7 p.m., Northwest University, on his new blockbuster book, Darwin's Doubt. And if it has anything like the impact of Signature in the Cell, his last bestseller, it will be an enormous impact. We're also joined by Professor John Lennox, who is a mathematician and at Oxford University, an author of God's Undertaker, Has Science Buried God? Let us go to James in Louisville, Kentucky. James, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an atheist, but I'm also very conservative. Unfortunately, I'm lumped in with liberals most of the time, but I think that there is quite a incompatibility between religion and science, particularly the Judeo-Christian religions. I think anybody who's actually studied, you know, the history of these religions can see that they're basically holdovers from, you know, our primitive days.
Okay, if you can focus for a moment on, say, either Judaism or Christianity today, as opposed to the Christianity, say, of the Crusades, which you'll acknowledge, right, James, that it's not Christianity has changed?
Yes, because it's been forced to be reinterpreted through the prism of modern thinking, scientific discoveries. Yet people still try to cling onto these ancient mythologies, even though...
Okay, which mythology is contradicted by science?
I would say all of them. I'd say Judaism, Christianity,
okay,
Islam.
Okay, which aspect, say, of Judaism or Christianity?
Well, their interpretations of the origins of the earth, the human species, you know, virtually.
Dr. Lennox, do you want to respond?
Yeah, well, certainly.
John Lennox?
Belief in
do
God...
Do we have... I think we... John Lennox,
yes,
you want to respond?
I'm here.
Yes, go ahead.
I think that there's no incompatibility at all between science and belief in God. That's very easy to see, actually, because you take someone like William Phillips, who won the Nobel Prize for Physics, an American. He's a Christian. Stephen Hawking probably will win the Nobel Prize. He's an atheist. What divides them is not their science, it's their worldview. And what I would say to your caller is that the conflict is not between science and belief in God at all. It's between two worldviews of materialism and theism. And actually, it is the case that the Judeo-Christian tradition was the birthplace of contemporary science. C.S. Lewis summarized Alfred North Whitehead's view, and he said this: men became scientific. Why? Because they expected law in nature, and they expected law in nature because they believed in a lawgiver. In other words, it was the basic conviction coming from the Judeo-Christian tradition that there was a lawgiver that was the motor that drove modern science. So it seems to me that that historical observation is immensely important.
James?
But nothing he just said actually makes an argument for, you know, the truth of there being a God. I mean, you can point to, you know, people in the past or whoever might have believed this or might have believed that, but it's not an argument for the truth of there being a God or not. And I think, you know, these modern Christians, they have been forced to throw away this, you know, 6-day or 7-day creation period. And all these, you know, the Noah story, all these things, they've been forced to relegate those and not talk about them, because if you analyze them with true scientific scrutiny, you know, none of these ancient stories hold up.
Okay, I'll tell you, hold on, gentlemen. Hold on. If you will hold up for just a moment, Dr. Lennox and Dr. Meyer and James. James, we're going to keep you on the line. And when we come back, we'll get a response from Dr. Stephen Meyer. And I think Dr. Lennox sounds like on the other side of the ocean that he is eager to respond. We will be right back. When we come back, Stephen Hawking was mentioned. He's just recently been in the news for supporting a boycott against Israel. How does that connect, or does it, to his recent contemptuous remarks about religion in general? We will get to that and more with Drs. Lennox and Meyer coming up.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com.
Four minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, our weekly science and culture update with the Science and Culture Institute of Discovery Institute, the Center for Science and Culture of Discovery Institute, with its director, Dr. Stephen Meyer, who is the author of Darwin's Doubt, and also joined by Dr. John Lennox from Oxford University, the author of God's Undertaker. Gentlemen, both responding to James in Louisville, who is a conservative and an atheist, and is struck by the fact that, and James, I want to do your point justice, that, as you say, modern Christians have had to junk fundamentals of the faith, in your opinion, in order to reckon with scientific discoveries. Would that be a fair statement of your position?
Yes, I would. I'd say a large portion of modern Christians have had to kind of relegate some of those, you know, some of those aspects to the wastebasket to keep it relevant, you
know. Okay, Dr. Meyer.
Well, I appreciate James's question, also his evident earnestness in addressing these big questions. I actually think that it's the opposite, that it isn't that science has forced serious Jewish people and Christians of faith to reformulate their religious beliefs. It's as Dr. Lennox said, that the Judeo-Christian heritage gave rise to science in the first place. You then, James, correctly pointed out that that's not an argument for the existence of God, but there is an argument to be made. And I think there are three key discoveries that you might keep in mind as you're deliberating about these big questions. One is the discovery in cosmology that the universe had a definite beginning, and that even time and space are part of that beginning, such that if you go back far enough, there's no matter left over to cause the universe to come into existence. It literally comes into existence at a true point of singularity. Secondly, physics has discovered that from the very beginning, the universe has been finely tuned for the possibility of human life. This sometimes goes under the heading of the anthropic fine tuning, but it's a very powerful argument for design from the very beginning. And then in the area where I work, we find lots of evidence of design in biology, especially in the digital code that's stored in the DNA molecule, and the difficulty of explaining that information in DNA apart from some kind of intelligence, some kind of programmer. And so when you add all that up, I think there's a very compelling argument to be made for the existence of God, not as a proof in the medieval sense, but as a very strong argument. I call it an inference to the best explanation. And I've explained that case in an article on our website called The Return of the God Hypothesis, and also in a series of lectures that are in a video called Does God Exist? That you can find on the web at trueu.org, with the U being capitalized. So you might investigate another point of view on your big question, but I do appreciate it.
James, you get the last word.
Basically, all of those arguments have already been thoroughly analyzed and debunked. There's counterarguments to, you know, everything he just said. You know, basically every religious argument that's been made.
James, let me just ask you just one
person to another, and not for the sake of argument. Don't you have a little bit of a problem with a purely atheist materialistic point of view, with the notion that matter is finite, that matter has a beginning? In other words, the Big Bang theory, so-called, which is now accepted universally in the scientific world, that there was the whole universe began at some point. Doesn't that create problems for an atheistic point of view?
Well, the thing is that we don't know exactly where the matter that was within the singularity originated from, you know. And
I think you'll concede, because you sound like you're very honest and direct and sincere, that it does create problems for a materialistic point of view if matter, in fact, came into existence suddenly.
And have a look at some of these resources I mentioned, James, because I deal with the counter-arguments that you mentioned, and I think we bring the discussion up to date. I think Michael's correct. It's a strong theistic implication in this new cosmology.
Let's quickly go to Jeff in Cleveland, Ohio. Jeff, you're on the MedVed Show with Dr. Lennox and Dr. Meyer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Gentlemen, as a believer, I'm always troubled by not so much the atheists, and like James, who was just on, but the average ordinary people who don't give a whole lot of thought to these issues, how we make the connection and why it's so important to have the right ideas, because they have such tremendous ramifications. I think, you know, during every election, the left tries to get the Republican with, you know, do you believe in evolution? And the idea being that generally the general population all accepts it whole. They don't understand, though, that that leads to a God's now, and how the idea of a belief in God and that life is sacred is what preserves life and what has always made life special. They kind of just, you know, I can remember a time when I spoke to irreligious people who said, well, you know, ethics is common sense. We know we're not supposed to hurt people, and, you know, that's a hard argument to make. It's critical we make the connection that the idea of God is so vital to true ethics and ethical behavior.
Dr. Lennox.
Yes, this is a very important observation, I think, because it seems to me that ethics is directly connected with the existence of God. After all, our Western tradition gets a lot of its ethical values on the statement in the Hebrew Bible that God created human beings in his own image. And it's very interesting to trace what happens when you deny that. Now, I have discussed publicly with Richard Dawkins his conclusions, if there is no God. And he comes down to the case that the universe is exactly as we might expect to find it. If at bottom there's no good, there's no evil, there's no justice. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. Now, if that is true, that is the end of all morality. And I know Dawkins tries to back away from that by claiming we can rebel against our selfish genes, but the philosophers have rightly pointed out, where is this non-material principle in his whole philosophy that allows you to do that?
I know that the famous statement in Brothers Karamazov by Fyodor Dostoevsky, without God, all things are permitted. And if Dostoevsky, who went through lots of searching and seeking and finding in his life, can get it as clear as that, we should do no less. We will be right back with Dr. John Lennox and Dr. Stephen Meyer in this Science and Culture update. Two great books, two great writers, two great philosophers of science. Stephen Meyer's book, Darwin's Doubt, posted up at our website. You can get a pre-publication price. It's 40% off. Huge saving. Always good to save money. We're fiscally responsible. We're conservatives. Go to the website, michaelmedved.com, and do the conservative thing. Check out Stephen Meyer's book. We also have posted the new book by Dr. John Lennox. It is called God's Undertaker: Has Science Buried God? And I'm fairly certain that Dr. Lennox's conclusion, Dr. Lennox joins us from Oxford University, that his conclusion is, no, God has not been buried. Let's go to Maddie in Philadelphia. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Drs. Lennox and Meyer.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I just had a quick question for your guests. If an organism could be found with a biological construct so complex that that construct could not be simplified and thus could not have evolved from something simpler, could that not prove intelligent design, and does such an organism exist?
Great question. I'll jump in there. The way you're framing that sounds similar to my colleague Michael Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box, and his investigation of what are called irreducibly complex systems. And I'd recommend that to you because he thinks there are things like miniature machines in cells. There are miniature machines in cells, and he thinks they have a kind of complexity that cannot be accounted for as a result of a gradual Darwinian mechanism, such as natural selection acting on random variations. And he thinks, moreover, they have a feature, namely this kind of integrated complexity that's known only to be produced by intelligence, ergo, they give evidence of intelligent design. So I'd look at his stuff as a way to investigate that question further.
Just to see this in another light, and I want to give Dr. Lennox the last word here. Part of what this means is that if things are this complex, then you have to believe that there's all of a sudden this mutation, random mutation, that springs up that has DNA code written on it, computer code written on it. And what's the best the other side has to offer in explaining that?
Is that addressed to me?
It is.
Oh, well, I think this is the most powerful evidence, Michael, actually, because it's not simply that the DNA code is complex. It is that it's semiotic. It has a dimension of language. Now, the fascinating thing is this, that if you take the average human, if they see the five or six letters of their name written in the sand on a beach somewhere in California, they instantly infer upwards to an intelligent input of information. And what puzzles me is when you think of the 3.5 billion letters of the DNA code, the longest word we've ever discovered, surely that is the most powerful evidence that in the beginning was the word.
Dr. John Lennox, appreciate your contributions. Dr. Stephen Meyer, we'll be speaking to you soon as part of our science and culture update from Discovery Institute. To find out more about this important work, and it is important and exciting, go to our website at michaelmedved.com for the sake of this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.